Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode 237, we're continuing on with our series focusing on cider making, and we have more tips from the team at Stormalong Cider, specifically looking at chemistry and some cautionary tales to watch out for, both for commercial makers and hobbyists. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. I have a mini chat for you this week. It is part three of this ongoing series, and because it's a little, well, cautionary, though we may not consider it, cider making can have an industrial element to it, and people can actually seriously get hurt. I don't want to like push you away, but yeah, it could happen. I mean, you know, really could happen just walking down the stairs in your house and you could slip, right? You're really thinking, I'm out of here. I don't want to listen to this podcast. But really, the whole goal this week is to provide you with some solid info so you can make decisions moving forward to keep you as safe as possible, because really, we want you around another day, happy as can be able to raise another glass. So it's part three, going with the team from Stormalong, who we had on last week's episode. That episode was titled Maker Tips for Growth and Cleanliness. Now, it's growth because the Stormalong team was initially based in a barn, like a classic wooden barn that once was the home for livestock, and all the stalls were taken out, and in came some small format stainless steel tanks, some barrels, and upstairs we met at the time in a room. It was a loft that probably at one time was handling all the hay. You know, they had to like power wash that and clean it out. And probably some of you are shaking your head right now and saying, yes, that's exactly my outfit that I do right now. Or I have a shed in the backyard, or a 10 by 10 little building that I got from the local hardware store that they're selling, you know, gets dropped by a trailer in your backyard, and there you are making cider, right? We do it in all these different ways. And these guys, and they are all men that I saw there at the cidery and on this week, they have this really interesting overview from moving from a barn to a higher production facility. So that was last week's episode. That was part two of this ongoing series on cider making. Part one was how to make cider at home. And that would help you if you are even thinking about dabbling into cider making. I really recommend to start at this very simple step, just to get the way that apple juice becomes cider. You know, the yeast eats the sugars and creates alcohol. It's just kind of a cool process. Before you get so much equipment, because you might find yourself looking at the barn in your backyard and thinking, that's looking pretty good. Maybe we can move out Baba Black Sheep and Charlotte the Pig, who knows, make that into a cidery. If that's what you're thinking, well, these episodes right now that we are in the midst of here in September 2020 are really the ticket and have a lot to consider. And particularly this episode this week is a more condensed episode because there's a lot here, and it's kind of a wake-up call for all of us who have worked with cleaning solutions in cider making. And certainly I have had some of these solutions in my basement right now as I am talking to you, and I have a different outlook on them, things I didn't really consider before. So I'm hoping that the shorter episode this week will give you ample time to turn off the podcast at some point and go to the show notes or look at the show notes at the same time and just write down some notes for yourself to be aware of that, especially folks who are out making cider at home with their family and kids around. We want to be careful, right? It's all the things that we kind of don't want to talk about, but we should talk about. So I give that to you this week because you are so important to me. So that's what we're going to head into very shortly with Ben, Bright, and Shannon, the cider team at Storm Along. I'm going to just take a little pause here, come back with a little letter that just came in, and then we'll be getting onto that feature chat. Last week, I mentioned that there was a new patron to Cider Chat. Folks sign up via the Cider Chat Patreon page, and I really encourage you to do so because it super helps this podcast get some of the equipment I need and get us online to be able to keep on producing episodes. So check it out at the Patreon page. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And this gentleman wrote back a more lengthy email to me that I'd like to share with you now. He writes, "I actually had the pleasure of meeting you very briefly at CiderCon in Chicago a few years ago, so I knew about Cider Chat. Recently, I was driving my son to Cal Poly from our home in Puyallup, Washington." If you say it in Danish, it's Puyallup. I bet there's a local way to say, I'm going to say it like in the Danish way, Puyallup, Washington. It's outside of Tacoma, Washington, so that's right on the border of Washington and Oregon. And probably you could see Mount Baker from Puyallup, Washington. Anyways, he said that he was on the drive with his son. It's 1,000 miles one way. 1,000 miles one way. Holy cazoli. It's a great chance to listen to a number of episodes. I especially enjoyed the chats with Ryan Monkman. Yeah, Ryan Monkman, Fieldbird Cider in Canada. We do some barrel aging, but this has inspired me to really up our own barrel program. They currently have 2,600 apple trees at our farm, and they're British bittersweet and American heirloom. Can't wait to try some full barrel conditioned ciders from primary to bottle. Oh, Rich, I'm so stoked for you. It's just so much fun working with the barrel. He writes, "I personally have been making cider for the last 30 years, but only pro since 2014. You certainly got pro a while ago in my mind. He says he loves traditional ciders and has traveled to the UK and Spain tasting ciders. Normandy is on his next stop, and we plan to go in March of 2020, but COVID-19 stopped that trip." Yeah, don't I know it. Anyways, at our cidery, we make several infused ciders. Raspberry, blackberry, strawberry, rhubarb are a few. The Puyallup Valley has a long history of being a berry-producing area, so this fits in very well for us, and they are quite popular in regards to the fruit ciders that they make. This being said, a traditional English bittersweet is still my favorite. All the Brits are smiling wildly, saying, "Yeah, we know." Thank you for continuing to spread the word about cider. You and your podcast are a credit to our profession. Oh, thanks, Rich. That's really nice. Look forward to seeing you again when we get out of this stinking pandemic. And thanks again for being a patron of Cider Chat. And I hope that that drive to Cal Poly was not bringing you to too many smoky places. You know, I've been hearing about so much fire happening on the West Coast, whether it's in California or Oregon or Washington. It's just, there's a lot going on. There is a lot going on in the world, whether it's there and or in Belarus or something in Hong Kong or Japan or remember Australia last year, the fires. Sure, people are still recovering from that. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and this is why I just so adore connecting with people in all your very special spots of Ciderville, just to remind each other that we just keep on doing one step in front of the other each day and to find something to smile about. All right, when I come back from this short pause here, we're going to be going into our featured conversation with the team at Storm Along Cider, based in Leominster, Massachusetts. And again, this topic is going to be on chemicals, talking about caustics, acid, and sanitizers. Oh, you're in for a treat.
Hi, how's it going? I'm Ben Robertsano with Storm Along Cider, and I'm here with my two compatriots.
Bright McConnell.
And Shannon Edgar.
Let's talk about chemicals. I'm going to start with caustic. You know, you got three different classes of cleaning chemicals. There's, I guess, a fourth as well. It would be caustics or alkaline cleaners, acids, sanitizers, and then you have non-alkaline cleaners and detergents, but I'm not really going to touch on those today. But there are some good options that are maybe a little bit more eco-friendly, that are more just like soap with enzymes in them. But I'm going to start off with alkalis. Alkalis, or caustics, are your bread and butter. They are relatively dangerous for your skin, but that is the reason why that they're really good at dealing with soils. They react with lipids and proteins, and turn chemically react with those components, those compounds that are on your tank, and they solubilize them into the solution. But also, they react with them in order to create soap. So, like, soaps are actually rendered fats that are reacted with caustic and then neutralized. So the good thing about caustic is, as you clean and the chemical action gets depleted, you're actually continuing to make soap. And the soap is not as strong as the caustic by itself, but it's still pretty effective. So you continue to have some pretty good efficacy even as the reaction with the soils is starting to neutralize the caustic. I recommend a gluconated caustic, usually at like a 1 to 1.5 fluid ounces per gallon. And if you don't, if you can't use caustic, or if you have to be around aluminum parts, unfortunately, I would definitely recommend a PBW or a phosphate. PBW is a metasilicate product. They're both powders that are alkaline, that are pretty good for cleaning. I will say that metasilicate, while it's very effective, is potentially yeast toxic, so you really need to be careful to rinse it. And these softer options aren't necessarily eco-friendly. So,
Ben, can I ask you, what does it mean, gluconated? Caustic. Is that...
So caustic is sodium hydroxide, which is really one of the more dangerous chemicals. It doesn't evaporate, but sodium hydroxide will burn you immediately on contact with your skin, particularly pure sodium hydroxide. Gluconated caustic is a sodium hydroxide that has a percentage of it that has been reacted with a gluconate in order to... it just turns it into a different chemical. The addition of the gluconated caustic actually makes the caustic less aggressive on your skin. It also slightly reduces the cleaning efficiency, but not as much as it increases the safety. It's also really, really important. I would recommend that you get a liquid caustic. I did state here that the phosphate and the PBW are both powdered products. Powdered chemicals are the most dangerous. People think that liquids are the most dangerous. Powdered chemicals, as far as non-evaporating chemicals, if you actually like look in the light, the amount of dust from scooping a powdered chemical is massive. And you can, you know, if you scoop into a bin of 100% pure lye and you're not wearing a full face dust mask, like one breath of caustic dust could kill you. So don't do that. Get a liquid caustic. And if you're handling PBW, wear a mask until it's fully solubilized.
Great.
The next thing would be acids. So acids are usually a bigger deal in the brewing world because they get beer stone. Like there's way more protein in beer than there is in cider, and that will react with the caustic and like sort of plate to the side of the vessel. And those little beer stone bits stuck to the side of the wall will actually create an attachment point. And because they're already alkaline, that stone deposit can't be cleaned with an alkali. So acids do two things. One, you get a big pH swing because you do your acid right after rinsing your caustic off. And that pH swing helps to kill bacteria that might be in biofilms that you're not fully removing. And also to treat hard water buildup, which can, in some cases, if you're using well water, could still be an issue even though you don't have high amounts of protein. In addition to that, they can rejuvenate the surface of your stainless steel parts. Strong acids can help bring a new chromium oxide layer to the surface of stainless and will help to keep your stainless strong and resistant to chemicals, but also prevent attachment from the biofilms that we were talking about. You can use methyl sulfonic acid, which I really like, really strong citric acid for a patch of passivation, or even for and lower levels for a partial clean. And then another popular ones are nitric or phosphoric mixes. they're effective, but they have a little bit more of an environmental impact if on septic, and they off-gas a little more. So I'm a little bit less of a fan of using nitrophos. Move it on to Bright for sanitizers.
Sanitizing, after you get all the biofilms and everything off, you know, you want to, you know, kind of seal it in with the final punch, which is sanitization. So iodophore is like a really great product, especially when you're stepping up into larger scale before you get to like the point where you can have automated dosers and things of that nature. Iodophore is an iodine-based sanitizer. You can tell when it's active, like you can visually see that it's in like the liquid. It's food safe, so you don't really need to do a rinse. You obviously don't want to leave like a puddle of it in the bottom of your tank before you know, dosing the thing, but it's okay to have like, you know, food contact with it. Star sand is not something that we recommend. It's perfectly fine on like the small homebrew setup, but like once you start getting into larger scale operations, it's just not a, an EPA recommended cleaner. If you are looking for a product made by that company, I mean, they do have an iodophore product, so you can always reach out for that.
What size containers do you get the iodophore? I use it as...
We get a gallon.
You get a gallon?
Yeah,
yeah, it goes a long way, doesn't it? Because you're diluting it.
It's stronger than most of the other chemicals we use. It's a, what is it?
It's one ounce per 5 gallons.
Yeah.
And so we're using an ounce per gallon or more of caustic, where we're using the higher range, and it's 1 ounce per 5 gallons. And if you wanted to use the lower range, high range is 25 ppm. Low range for iodophore is 12.5. So if you're using 12.5, it would only be a half an ounce per 5 gallons. So it really does go quite a long ways.
And Ben, you've given me the warning, you know, a while back about how you don't want to get that stuff in your eyes. Like if you splashed a full splash of iodophore in your eye, it would turn it brown, right?
It would permanently dye it, and you would be blind.
Permanently dye your eye.
We would not want that to happen. Too.
So, I mean, but it's an easy thing to overlook when you're busy and you're like, oh, this iodophore stuff I just dump this stuff in, then boom, a little splash goes and gets in your eye.
Right.
Or it's not good.
Yeah, you say, like, why would I want to use iodophore if it could make me blind? Well, you know, any chemical is dangerous if you're not using it properly. And then the other two, or there's, I guess, three other, you know, viable chemical sanitizers you could use, and those are PAA, peroxyacetic acid. It's the second strongest oxidizer on the planet, about as safe as it sounds. Sulfites, which I'm allergic to, so we don't use. And chlorine dioxide, which is very effective and relatively safe when properly prepared. But if it's improperly prepared, and it's a multi-step process, then it could actually form a poisonous gas. So really those should only be used by commercial scale cideries that have people who can understand the chemistry, and spraying or handling those chemicals could cause permanent respiratory or eye damage. Particularly the very first job I worked, they were pumping PAA from a drum and mixing it in a partial, but super high concentration, but less than the barrel concentration, in a bucket in order to pull it into a keg washer. And I walked by, somebody had done this fill up and walked over to the keg washer, and I walked through the chemical plume about 2 or 3 minutes later, and it immediately burned my eyes and my lungs, and I ran to the bathroom, washed my eyes out.
Wow.
And 2 weeks later, I had convinced the ownership that we had to get a dosing system. I would not recommend, and I think it's unethical to have your employees use PAA unless it is properly dosed down to a 250 ppm or lower directly out of the barrel.
You can tell the dose.
Dosatron.
Dosatron is the company to talk to about dosers.
They're not the cheapest, but honestly, it will save you a lot of time. And, you know, the PAA is so dangerous that one big breathful of the vapor could cause delayed pulmonary edema. And the vapors of the concentrate, not the level that you would actually use, but the vapors of the concentrate are enough to scar your corneas on contact. It eats away at them.
But at the same token, what we're trying to say here is this is at the high concentration when you're getting it from the supplier.
Right.
But once it's dosed correctly, PAA is one of the safest chemicals to use.
It still has risk.
Right. It turns into vinegar, basically.
Right, that's true. Yes, right. So Shane is saying safe, you know, the PAA, unlike you know, some of the other sanitizers, after it's done, it just turns into acetic acid. There's nothing. It's acetic acid, oxygen, and hydrogen peroxide.
Right.
And
so it's a great chemical that we use all the time. But the point is the way that you're mixing it and extracting it from its container is a big deal with PAA, because it will blind you on contact if you got concentrated.
I hear that.
PAA.
We don't want that to happen.
No, we don't want that.
And you know, that's a good point, because we're talking about the dangers. We don't want anybody thinking that, well, is this going into my glass of cider? And this isn't. This is just all the sanitizing beats going on. And obviously, you have the wherewithal how to do this and the scientific base, which is helping you scale up to this level. You got to really approach it with a much broader view than I'm just going to go get the apples thrown in and,
you know, we didn't talk about it yet, and we're going to talk about it in just a sec, but as you said, it's not actually going into your glass of cider, and that has to do with all of the rinsing we do. It may be water wasteful, but I am very careful about using, exactly as much rinse water as I need, and then some. Because, whatever you're doing, making sure that all of that chemical residue is off, even if it is not going to have a significant impact on the many, you know, for us, thousands of gallons of cider that are going to go in, I don't feel comfortable putting cider in a tank with any sort of chemical residue,
And you would never taste it in your cider either. I mean, I know I could speak from experience having Sturmalong. It's just the life of cider. You guys are kicking it out of the ballpark. And so we're not going to worry about that.
And if you don't clean, you'll taste that too.
You will.
Or you'll definitely taste that.
Exactly.
Hooey, you know I'm going to be wearing goggles now whenever I grab my Iofor, which I have been using since forever. In fact, the one bottle I had probably over the past 20 years just kicked the bucket. So that is how much I've been diluting it for my cider making, which has kind of scaled up a little bit for me this year. But for the most part, it's dilute, and be safe. I love what these guys have offered here. Again, that was the lead there was Ben, who is the head cider maker at Sturmalong Cider. His full name is Ben Robertsano. And then Bright McConnell is the operations manager. And then you heard from Shannon Edgar, who is the owner and founder of Sturmalong Cider. They're based in Sherbourne, Massachusetts, and then moved to Leominster, the home of Johnny Appleseed, the birthplace, I should say, because Johnny's not around anymore. Anyways, they're going to be with us next week to be providing us their final piece on managing a cidery and some particular tips for cider makers, and you don't want to miss it. So if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, now is a good time. And make sure to check out the show notes, maybe just copy and paste some of that stuff to your cidery as a reminder for anyone walking in. Cider making's fun, but we all know accidents can happen, and we don't want that to happen to anyone out there when it can be avoided. So a lot to be thinking about, and I leave you there. It's beautiful outside, and I have a bit of, cider making to do myself, some organizational stuff, and I need to enjoy this September day. So I hope that you are too, and next week we'll be continuing on with our part 4 of cider making.
Going up, going up.
This is Real Wind Caller. Signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like ponds. We love orchards. And having fun, there is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!